good enough for Marty. Laurel blew out a breath. I would not say that exactly. Then what would you say, exactly? Laurel gave him a playful tap. You make it sound sinister when it is just the opposite. Those two were going down a path that would lead to heartache. They needed someone to stop them from making an enduring mistake.
Why would it be a mistake? Vary must be very smart, for I cannot see him willingly spending hours with someone who was merely pretty. And by some miracle, they get along. With the exception of Bonnie, Cornyn is not overly fond of your gender, my love. Even you wear on his nerves at times.
Laurel let go a soft snort. He wears on mine as well.
That's my point. Both of them sought each other's company time and time again. And I think Vary is good for Cornyn. I can't remember the last time I heard his tongue wag about the trials of being forced to deal with tedious servants, witless clanswomen, or ignorant soldiers. And there was this morning, Connor said, tapping her arm to emphasize his point. He actually argued back, instead of walking away. And from what I heard, Vary was not in the least afraid when he began to yell. She supposedly shouted back. Now you know what happens when couples fight like that, love.
Laurel slowly began to draw circles, forgetting what that always led to. They make up, but Cornyn and Vary are not a couple. And what's more, they do not see themselves as a couple, not now or in the future. And you and I might have denied saying our feelings aloud, but deep down we both wanted to be with each other almost from the moment we met.
I would have thought spending more time together would fix that, not create a fight.
Vary is young and inexperienced, and Cornyn has been focused for so long on only one thing, leaving. She took a deep breath and sighed once more. Both think they see their futures clearly, and neither have considered including the other in them. And I have no doubt that Vary will get hurt if she falls for him first.
Connor pulled back and waited until Laurel tilted her head to look at him.
First?
Laurel nodded.
I don't know if they are destined for each other, at least not like your brothers. But I do know that if I had not stopped their foolish plans to trick the other before it really got started, they would not have one.
She laid her head back down. Neither of them knows what they want when it comes to love. They've never considered the idea of falling in love, and now that they have met someone who might indeed be their soulmate, neither seems to realize they may need to change their vision of the future, let alone being willing to do it.
How do you know that? Perhaps given more time together they would. It took me time to adjust, same as it did for Colin. And look at Craig. Remember, he resisted Meriel for quite a long while.
Now look who is trying to play the matchmaker.
Connor did not deny it.
I worry about Cornyn going off alone. Not physically, but I've already lost Clyde, I fear. I do not want to lose Cornyn as well. He may be comfortable being by himself, but that doesn't mean he does not need someone.
We all do, Laurel agreed. And if Vary and Cornyn are right for each other, then they will find their way. Now they at least have a chance.
A good fight can help clear misunderstandings. I only hope it wasn't betrayal I saw on both Cornyn and Vary's faces. That is not easily overcome.
Laurel rolled over on top of Connor. Her tummy was seriously starting to show, and soon she would not be able to do so. She gazed into his grey eyes. You know that love is not the only necessary ingredient to a happy marriage. Honesty is just as important. And now Vary and Cornyn are no longer pretending.
Pretending to like each other.
Pretending they only felt friendship. Her pretending to be interested in others, and him pretending not to be jealous. Those two treasure brutal honesty, and both were being dishonest, not just with each other, but themselves.
Connor gave her a quick kiss. So tonight was about forcing them to be honest with each other. That's a good thing.
Laurel nodded and returned his kiss with a sweet one of her own. And once they are, it's possible they will fall in love, she said, her voice low and dubious.
Connor sighed and flopped his head back on the pillows. You are confusing me again, woman. I thought we just agreed that it would be better if Conan was not alone, and to do that, they needed to be honest and fall in love.
Aye, but is love going to be enough for Conan to include Mari into his future?
Connor gave her a light squeeze.
Then it will be his loss, because if he knew how good it feels to have a woman who loves him in his arms every night, Father Lanelly would be preparing for a wedding.
Laurel splayed her fingers across Connor's chest and lifted her face, offering him her mouth. He kissed her slowly, lingeringly, and with a deep, tender possessiveness.
He still might, Laurel grinned.
On second thought, I don't think you should resume your role of matchmaker, Laurel, especially in your condition. Conan can make even the most patient person furious at times, and you should not get riled. Besides, he is so furious with you, I don't think he is going to listen to anything you have to say.
I have no intention of directly taking on that role, she said with a mischievous smile. I have no need to. Conan already has a female in his life to whom he listens. He just doesn't realize it.
Then Laurel kissed him again thoroughly, ending any possibility of continuing the conversation. Brenna and Bonnie raced into their room right after their father ordered them to leave the Great Hall. He had told them to prepare for bed, but it was still early, and it would be at least an hour or two before Megan or a servant came to ensure they were settled for the night. Bonnie went to sit by the hearth and looked for one of the Latin books that Connor had given her to practice. She expected Brenna to undress and put on a robe per her normal routine, but her sister was instead quickly running a brush through her blonde hair. Bonnie stood up, put the book down, and went over to where Brenna was splashing water on her face.
"What are you planning?" she asked, crossing her arms, imitating what Conan did when he suspected her sister of something.
Brenna dabbed a cloth on her face to dry it and said,
"I'm leaving."
She gave the towel to Bonnie and pointed to the bowl. "And so are you." Bonnie took the towel and said,
"But Papa said..."
"Papa only said to come to the room and prepare for bed. I've brushed my hair and washed my face. I did what he said. Now it is your turn." Bonnie began to splash water on her face.
"I don't think he meant for us to leave again," she mumbled as she began to dry her face off.
"Then stay," Brenna replied in superior tone. "But I'm going to find out what is happening with Mari and Uncle Conan." She then headed for the secret door in their room. Their castle was full of them. Her great-grandfather had insisted that there be multiple ways to escape any room in case McTierney Castle was ever attacked. Brenna had never known anyone to need the passageways for safety reasons, but she thought them marvelous things for discovering bits and pieces of information. And the best conversations were the ones everyone thought her too young to know. Bonnie narrowed her eyes. Most knew about Brenna and her continual propensity to eavesdrop, but it was not as well known just how often Bonnie went with her. If Brenna was about to take the risk and sneak back out, it was not very hard to figure out who her sister wanted to spy on. Besides, Brenna was right. Things were happening, and it was certain that Conan and Mari were not going to tell them anything. Bonnie had discovered a few years ago that while she did not share her older sister's passion for the thrill of not being caught, she did learn a lot more about people by eavesdropping than she did by asking grown-ups questions.
"I'm coming," Bonnie announced.
Brenna stopped and turned around.
"Fine, but hurry. Braden is going to get bored and come here any minute."
Bonnie ran two quick swipes of a brush through her hair and rushed after her older sister into the dark corridor. Minutes later, they emerged from the stairwell into the storage room on the bottom floor of the tower. After years of practice, both were adept at hearing approaching footsteps and knowing where to duck out of sight until they passed. Bonnie whispered,
"Where are we going first? Vary's or Conan's?"
Brenna bit her bottom lip.
"Both could be talking right now, so you go find out what Uncle Conan is saying to Seamus, and I'll go listen to Mari and Megan."
"How do you know they are not alone?"
Brenner rolled her eyes in an exaggerated fashion that Bonnie hated. If Megan wasn't talking to Vari, she would have been checking on us. And if she is speaking to Vari, then she told Seamus to check on Uncle Conan.
Bonnie was not sure, but it did not matter.
"We meet back at the room?" she asked.
Brenner nodded and began to rub her hands together, as if she were about to start an exciting game.
"You tell me everything Uncle Conan said, and I will tell you everything I heard Vari say."
"And then what?"
Bonnie asked, seeing that her sister was up to more than just discovering what was going on.
"Then we figure out what we are going to do, because if Mama won't help Uncle Conan win, then we will."
Now that was the first idea Brenner had had that Bonnie fully supported. With a smile and a nod, she followed her sister into the shadows of the courtyard before splitting off to the North Tower as Brenner headed for Bari's room.
Chapter 8
Seamus slowly opened the door to Conan's chambers and peeked in. Conan was inside, pacing in the work area of his chambers. Seamus hesitated, and then thought better of it. He had been outside for over a half hour, getting reamed by Megan, who seemed to think everything that was happening was his fault, as it had been his idea for Conan to deceive Vari. At first he had been so shocked by Megan's tirade that he had not responded well at all. Seamus had felt his honour was being attacked, and immediately gone on both the defensive and the offensive, making it clear that she was the one who should be ashamed of her actions, not him. That it was one thing for a child to eavesdrop on a private conversation, but for an adult woman to take what she had overheard and use it to embarrass and belittle a man whose family had taken her in when she had no one, was inexcusable. Almost as soon as the words had left his mouth, Seamus had wished he could take them back, but it was too late. At least then he had done the smart thing and stuck with apologies and explanations, which Megan had ignored while peppering him with more words on the delicacy of the human heart. In the end, he wondered if Megan was ever going to talk to him again, and felt his heart break when she walked away with a goodbye that felt all too final. Knowing sleep was not possible, Seamus had sought the one other man he knew was as miserable as he was, Conan. But by the looks of things, Conan was not miserable at all. He was furious, and it was going to take a lot longer than an hour to cool the anger visibly writhing through his friend. There was minimal room for walking, so Conan could only take a handful of steps before being forced to turn, and then a couple of seconds later he was turning once more. It was making Seamus dizzy, but asking Conan to sit or slow his pacing was not an option at the moment.
"Damn woman!" Conan growled with significant bite upon seeing Seamus, continuing his fast back-and-forth walk.
"Which one?"
Seamus asked, hoping that a little levity might at least get Conan to stop and sit down. Seamus could only recall being as furious as Conan was right now, a couple of times, and both of them had been over a woman. The first time it had happened, his response had been to pace as well, which had only fueled his ire, not helped it. With every step he had repeated the words that had driven him to a fury, which eventually resulted in him punching a wooden door and nearly breaking his hand. Seamus could still remember the pain and the weeks it had taken before he could properly grip a sword with any authority again. Conan was on that same path.
"Laurel," Conan answered, "and Vari, and Megan."
He took a few steps and stopped to glare at Seamus.
"Damn them all."
He began to pace again.
"Might want to damn me as well,"
Seamus said, leaning against one of the bookcases.
"I encouraged you to try that bad idea to charm Vari."
"Ha! According to Laurel, I was trying to seduce Vari, as if I could. Men should be warned about her. How dare she accuse me of using someone emotionally, when every day she is teasing another man, toying with him, kissing him, making him believe she feels more than she does. I wish Loman the best of luck getting anything real from that woman."
Seamus shifted his stance and began to wonder how deep Conan's feelings were for Vari. The man had refused to admit that he even liked her, but based on what Seamus was seeing and hearing, Conan did a lot more than like the woman, for his normal reaction to an angry woman was complete indifference.
"I don't think Lorman is interested in Vari, nor she him," Conan snorted.
"Then I wonder who will be next. Sean seemed eager enough when I saw him the other day."
"Do you know what your real problem is?" Seamus posed. "You like Vari. In fact, I would say you're fascinated by her. Just admit it. You've never met anyone like her, and that's why what she did has you so upset."
Conan turned his back on Seamus and stared into the dark courtyard below. He could see shadows moving, but the world had quieted.
"It's understandable," Seamus continued. "Vari is beautiful and smart and sweet. It's impossible not to like her."
Conan continued to stare down into the inky darkness.
"Vari is not sweet in the least. She is calculating and, as I discovered tonight, quite devious."
"Aye, that was surprising, to learn she had overheard us plotting."
Conan stopped short.
"You think Laurel was right, that I was trying to swindle Vari out of her things?"
Seamus shook his head and kept his expression neutral.
"I don't think so, but I can see how Vari might see it that way."
Conan narrowed his gaze and took a couple of threatening steps toward Seamus.
"She got to you, didn't she?"
he asked rhetorically, before waving a hand and resuming his pacing.
"Megan, I should have known she would blame you and make you feel guilty for something you didn't even do."
"Mushed. You like her so much you can't even have an opinion that she won't approve of any more."
Seamus pushed himself off the bookcase and was about to remind Conan with his fist that while he could ignore most of Conan's barbs, his tolerance did not extend to insulting Megan. But before he could take a step, the door opened again. Bonnie entered, waved at him as she moved by, and then plopped down in the chair she always sat on when she came to visit her uncle. Bonnie sat and looked at Seamus and Uncle Conan, who were both staring at her. She wondered if she had made a mistake about joining Conan versus listening in on him like Brenna had wanted. The problem with eavesdropping was that while it was an effective way to learn what was going on, it never allowed for asking questions, and Bonnie had several. She decided to start with what she thought was the easiest.
"Why are you so mad, Uncle Conan?"
"Because," he sputtered, "your friend Vari wanted to make me look like a fool."
Bonnie was still confused and pursed her lips together and nodded.
"Girls don't like it when you try to take their stuff. Maybe you should apologize," she suggested.
"I apologize," he repeated. "I should apologize," he said once more, this time to Seamus, who gave a half-hearted shrug in agreement. "What about Vari?" Conan asked. "What about her listening in on my conversation? Even you," he said, pointing to Bonnie in the chair, "have more honesty about you coming in here and not hiding behind some door misinterpreting everything you hear."
Bonnie crossed her arms and thought for a second.
"But it was her room she was listening to. I don't think she would do that anywhere else."
Conan's jaw dropped.
"I mean, if she was in here with Megan, wouldn't you have wanted to know what was going on?"
"Were you with them, Bonnie?"
She shook her head.
"Only Brenna, Vari, and Megan were there. I thought you were building shelves, not trying to take all her books."
Conan threw his hands up into the air.
"I wasn't trying to take all her books. Mushed. I was really hoping for some pages, or maybe, by some miracle, one book, if her father brought some new ones to sell when he arrived. I know what those books mean to Vari, and she should know that," he shouted angrily.
Bonnie was surprised to hear her uncle shout. It was very unlike him. Unlike the rest of the family, when he was annoyed, he did not yell. He just grumbled. A lot. Which was good, Bonnie thought, because he was annoyed a lot. And yet, hearing her uncle shout right now did not bother her. In fact, she thought Brenna would think it a good thing, because whenever their parents fought, it always ended up with them together.
"I don't think Vari knows that," Bonnie said. "If you told me that you weren't really trying to take my stuff, it would make me feel better."
"I should not have to. Vari knows I plan on using vellum. Paper may be lighter, and so I could carry more of it and capture more information.
but eventually it would not matter. The vellum I'm preparing is much larger, and more importantly, easier to stitch together into a single large map. Bonnie rolled her eyes upward and thought for a minute.
I think she might have forgotten that. I still think maybe, she said, tapping her chin like her mama did when she was thinking, you should tell her. Vari cried when she thought you wanted all her stuff. Brenna says that girls only get mad at boys when they like them, and Vari was really mad at you. She said that she thought you were different, but that she was wrong, and you were like all the rest. I'm not sure what that means. Do you?
Conan stared at Bonnie for several long seconds before answering. I do. It means but I need to talk to Vari right now.
And then he was gone. Bonnie blinked. She was not sure that going to see Vari while she was still so angry was such a good idea. Bonnie had been thinking that Conan would seek Vari out in the morning, or tell her he was sorry over the morning meal. Regardless, Brenna was going to be very excited about this. Thinking about her sister reminded Bonnie that Brenna was actively eavesdropping on Vari and would soon be listening to Conan as well. It was one thing for Brenna to tell her about what Vari was saying to Megan, but Bonnie did not want to learn what Conan said to Vari second-hand. It was she who had sent him there, so it should be she who got to listen to how it went. Bonnie looked at Seamus, who was staring where Conan had been standing, still looking a little befuddled.
"I have to go," she announced,
and then she too disappeared out the door. Bonnie took the shortcut, glad she knew where Brenna liked to hide in the Warden's Tower when it was only her. Vari took a deep breath when she heard the sharp knock on the door. She wanted to shout at her friend that she meant what she had said, that she was done talking for the evening and wanted to hear no more advice. When Megan had joined her earlier, Vari had been happy to see her nearly as angry as she was. She had been even happier to hear that Megan had ambushed Seamus, telling him how disgusted she was with his part in all that had happened. Then Megan had done the unthinkable and begun to defend the man. It was as if Conan were there himself, trying to minimize what he had done. Maybe they had jumped to the wrong conclusions about what Seamus and Conan were trying to do. Maybe it was not really as bad as they'd first thought. Maybe they should believe Seamus and Conan, for they had looked truly shocked and betrayed by their accusations. Maybe they should have thought things through before wanting revenge. Maybe it was somewhat underhanded to entrap someone with only one goal, to humiliate them. Vari had finally had enough and practically shoved Megan out her door, proclaiming she needed time to think. Unfortunately, the ceaseless knock on her door proved Megan was not so easily gotten rid of. Vari was almost resolved to let her friend knock all night, when it occurred to her that Megan might be trying to apologize. Ready to listen to an apology, or once again send her friend away as politely but firmly as possible, Vari opened the door. The moment she saw who was on the other side, her jaw literally dropped. She was still in shock when Conan moved around her and entered her room without even asking. Her wits were just returning, and she was about to order him to leave when he pressed one index finger against her lips and one against his own. Then he tiptoed over to the large tapestry that hung from the ceiling to floor next to the hearth. With a grand gesture he pulled back the heavy drape and then rammed his foot on the half-sized wooden door it hid. The planks gave way, and the semi-door creaked open to reveal a dark, narrow passageway. Vari realized she was looking at the very place she, Megan, and Brenna had sat huddled together, listening to Conan as he planned to persuade her to give him all her hemp paper. Conan closed the door and let the tapestry fall back into place.
Good, he announced. We are alone. Now we can talk.
Vari crossed her arms and tilted her chin up.
I have nothing to say.
Conan's gaze burned into Vari's.
Aye, you do. You're going to answer my questions, he said without equivocation.
His directness shook her, but Vari did not want Conan to know he affected her at all, so she shrugged her shoulders in mock resignation.
I will never lie to you, she said,
echoing what he had told her. "I only want to know if you really thought that I would try and take your things away from you." Vari blinked her peridot-like eyes. She was going to declare that she did, but seeing Conan, with his blue eyes smouldering with indignation, she wondered if she had been wrong. "But I hugged you," she finally said, for it was true. "Then let me ask you this. Before overhearing Seamus and my conversation yesterday, would you have ever thought that I would try and take your things away from you?" Vari swallowed with difficulty, but after a couple of seconds she found her voice and once again answered honestly. "I would have thought the opposite, probably even come to your defense if somebody had accused you of such an act. But then I heard what you said," she finished, emphasizing that it was not a simple misunderstanding, and that Conan had damned himself with his own words. Fury began to build within Conan once again. "So, all the hours we spent together, talking, sharing, and getting to know one another, were just what? A lie? A waste of time?" Bari's brow furrowed. "Of course not. They must be, because if you truly believe that I would stoop so low as to steal paper, you must believe everything else we shared was a falsehood. I cannot be both your friend who would do serious bodily injury to anyone who did what you accused me of, and your enemy at the same time." Nervously, Vari bit her lip. She hated to admit it, but Conan had a point. "Then why," she whispered, the pain she felt coming through, "why would you say all those things about me being susceptible to your kisses, and that I should give you a gift in return for these shelves, or that it should be all my idea to give you all my paper?" Conan reached out and gripped her arms tightly. "First, I never wanted all your paper, but only what you were willing to give me. I was hoping for some pages, and in my dreams perhaps a book. But I realized not even an hour later that your father was coming, and I could probably buy as much paper as I wanted from him. But as for why I said all those things, haven't you mused something aloud? Some fantasy that if someone overheard, they could misconstrue into thinking you actually believed what you were saying." Tears began to roll down Vari's cheeks as she finally understood. "I didn't want to believe what I heard. I'm sorry. I just was so hurt." Conan pulled her into his arms and held her close. "Shh," he whispered into her hair. "I wished you had come to me, confronted me directly. Why didn't you?" Vari clung to Conan, reveling in the feeling of being in his arms. For the past 24 hours she had felt alone and bereft, and now all she felt was safe. A part of her wanted to stay there forever. Another part wanted to run and protect her heart. She battered the painful thought away into a recess of her mind, and instead pressed even closer to his warmth. There was something about his physical presence. Vari never wanted him to stop holding her, plain and simple. The feel of his hand on her face caused her lashes to flutter open and look up in the bluest eyes. She had no idea how he could channel so much intensity through them, but the look he was giving her made her heart race. Conan pushed Vari's soft, thick hair off her shoulders, wishing he could hear what she was thinking. He knew he should step away. His control was already on a knife's edge, inflamed by her anger, her tears, and now the desire shimmering beneath the apprehension in her green eyes. But he couldn't. Vari was the most stunning woman he had ever seen. Everything from her satin skin and silky tresses to her tempting lips and unusual green eyes, fringed with long lashes, called to him on a primal level. Not a detail escaped him. Vari's breath caught in her throat. Conan's fingers traced the planes of her face with a feather-like touch, tipped with heat. She felt herself melt under his scrutiny, aching for him to speak, to touch her, to do something other than stare into her eyes. Conan lightly caressed her cheek. "You are so beautiful," he whispered in a thick, gruff voice that sent an ache racing through her. He bent his dark head, and his warm breath sent a shiver of heat through the pit of her stomach.
"Kiss me, Vari,"
he demanded hoarsely. Needing no more coaxing, Vari met his lips and opened her mouth, allowing Conan to make slow love to her with his tongue. Vari closed her eyes and let herself fall into the embrace, sinking into his strong arms. Unlike their previous kiss, which had been powerful, claiming, and aggressive, Conan was kissing her slowly, lingeringly, and with deep, tender possessiveness. Her heart slammed in her chest as Conan was creating an irresistible desire to become his, and only his, in every way. Conan captured her sigh and deepened their embrace, kissing her over and over again. Her mouth was warm and welcoming, exactly like he had remembered. He cradled her face in his hands and drank hungrily from her lips, delighting in the feel of her wild pulse underneath his thumb, telling him that she desired him just as much. Soon need would overtake them both. Conan was about to pull away when he felt Vari's hands press against his back. The soft, hesitant caress caused him to growl and delve once again into the sweetness of her mouth. Her fingers traveled up his back and plunged into his hair. The impassioned touch sent a new heat curling through his blood. Vari's mouth responded to each stroke of his tongue, hot, wet, and clinging. Her body moved against his, each touch innocent and erotic. God, she was soft, inviting. Conan knew he would never get enough of her. No caress, no kiss, no touch would ever be enough. He wanted to consume the essence of her vibrant spirit. Vari felt herself quivering. Conan's sheer masculinity was overpowering. With each kiss, she wanted more, but he refused to give in, and it was making her senseless with a growing need she did not understand. His kisses were soft but consuming. Filled with so much tenderness, it felt as if her heart was swelling in her chest, nearly choking her. But the longer his lips caressed her, the less will she had. From deep within him, she heard the rumblings of a satisfied groan. Vari twisted her fingers in his hair and held on for dear life. Nothing had prepared her for what she was feeling. She could feel the warmth of his hands splayed over her back through the material of her gown. A strange heat burned low in her stomach as a rush of shivers ran from the top of her neck down her spine, his kiss feeding both of those glorious feelings at once. Soon, hot ripples of pleasure slid down her thighs, and a moan of despair and desire escaped her throat. Vari was not sure what she was asking for, but it was flooding her with an aching demand. Vari's earnest and open response to each caress shocked Conan. His pulse raced as she surged against him. His lips left hers and found the soft, sensitive spot beneath her ear, then slid down her neck.
"Got you everything a man could want," he whispered against her skin. "Smart, fiery, and uncommonly sensuous."
Conan's mouth was soft and wet and firm, and the feel of his lips roaming her skin made her dizzy. While he nibbled at her earlobe, Vari forgot to breathe. Her knees suddenly gave out, and if Conan's arms hadn't been around her, she would have dissolved into a little puddle of desire at his feet.
"I don't know what's happening to me," Vari heard herself mumble, surprised she could talk at all, for every fiber of her being was on fire, aroused into a bright burning flame. But still she wanted more. Vari's soft confession was enough to remind Conan that he needed to regain his diminishing control. They were in her bedchambers, alone, and moments away from doing something that would change their lives forever. Self-perseverance forced him to release her lips. He kept his arms circled about her, breathing in her scent.
"Can you speak?" he murmured.
His face was buried in the side of Vari's neck as he struggled for control over his rampant, covetous emotions. He wasn't sure what would have happened if Vari had asked him to stay with her. A whole night with Vari in his arms? He feared he would be lost, addicted, and that he might never be able to let her go.
"You robbed me of words."
Her voice was muffled, her face buried against his chest as she inhaled his musky scent. With all the women before, he had easily kept himself detached, using them for what he needed and then leaving soon after. He had become careful to bed only those who would not cling or ask for more, because he knew he would never commit himself to a woman. With Vari, that still did not change. Yet, a slowly growing voice deep inside him disagreed. Conan lifted his hand, moving one of the dark wisps of hair from her forehead. With only the tips of his fingers, he tenderly traced every hollow, every curve of her face he so longed to kiss and know more intimately, but knew he never would. He stared down into her passion-filled eyes.
"I think I like the idea of being able to make you speechless."
Vari smiled.
"I think I like that idea as well."
Then she placed her cheek back on his chest, basking in his warmth.
"Good thing it is your turn to do all the talking."
Conan lightly kissed the top of her head, unwilling to let her go just yet.
"How so?"
Vari giggled.
"Well, I apologized. Now it is your turn."
Conan stiffened.
"Apologize for what?"
Vari leaned back to look up at him, her brows arched in surprise.
"Why, for all those things that you said."
Conan was sorry, had even planned on apologizing for them, at some time, in his own way. But demanding contrition was too reminiscent of how his brother's wives acted after a fight. Conan had always thought it manipulative and conniving, but had been even more disgusted that his brothers had always so easily fallen for the trap. Now he understood, for he had almost become that very person. Conan's jaw tightened. He took a step back and let his gaze sweep over Vari, taking her in from head to toe in one swift, heated glance.
"Do not turn a simple kiss into some imaginative love story, where you suddenly feel emboldened with power to compel me to do your bidding just to make you happy."
If Conan had reached out and slapped her, Vari could not have been more shocked or hurt, but it did not matter, for that pain began to morph into white-hot anger.
"How dare you!" she hissed, pushing him away. "The whole world knows no one compels the great Conan McTierney to do anyone's bidding but his own. I was not demanding an apology, but assuming you felt some regret for your role in what happened. And while I will not deny being attracted to you, it is not like I am alone. Any sane woman would find you physically tempting, but enjoying a simple kiss is a far cry from a love story. My heart could only be stolen by someone who was honourable, honest, kind, and heroic."
Vari marched to her bedchamber door and swung it open, gesturing for him to leave.
"And you most certainly are none of those things."
Bonnie and Brenna listened in misery as Vari and Conan broke away, followed by the clunk of her bedroom door. Knowing there was nothing left to hear, Brenna tugged on Bonnie's sleeve, indicating that she was leaving. Bonnie followed Brenna all the way back to their chambers in silence, waiting until they were inside and alone before she spoke.
"I think Conan just lost for good this time."
Brenna used her toes to pull off her slippers and then slumped into one of the two chairs that were by the fireplace in their room. It was nothing as nice and grand as the great hall chairs everyone liked to steal for their rooms, but they were padded and comfortable, and no one ever got mad when she sat in her preferred position of sideways.
"I wonder what made Uncle Conan say that."
Bonnie flopped into the chair next to Brenna.
"Probably fear. I heard Mama say that about Uncle Craig once. Or maybe it was Uncle Crevin," she mused. "She said he was afraid of love, and that was why he pushed it away."
Brenna swung her legs back and forth over the chair's sidearm.
"You're right. Uncle Conan loves Vari, but I'm not sure she loves him any more." "Why?"
Bonnie asked.
"Uncle Conan is all those things," she said.
Brenna grimaced.
Well, he's honest, but I'm not sure about kind. And did you notice how he refused to apologize?
She took a deep breath and sighed as she dropped her head back to let her blonde hair swing over the other sidearm.
Boys are so silly. Why is I'm sorry so hard to say?
Bonnie shrugged.
I don't know. We say it all the time.
Brenna nodded upside down.
I think it's because we're girls. Braden and Gideon won't apologize, not even to each other.
Bonnie nodded.
But Uncle Conan is honorable. Papa says that's when someone is honest, trustworthy, and loyal, and keeps his word. So Uncle Conan definitely is honorable.
Maybe, Brenna acknowledged, but what about kind?
Uncle Conan is when he wants to be,
Bonnie refuted, stretching to pick up the brush on the table next to her, where she had left it in her mad rush earlier.
He's always nice to me.
True, Brenna said, drawing out the word as she thought over all the qualifications Vari had listed for the person with whom she could fall in love.
Honorable, honest, kind, and heroic.
She lifted her head and looked at her younger sister.
So let's say we were able to show Vari that Uncle Conan's honorable, honest, and kind. What about the last one? How are we going to prove he's a hero?
Bonnie began to toss her brush in the air and catch it.
That is the easiest one. Uncle Conan is a hero practically every day.
Brenna snorted and let her head flop back down.
I don't think anyone but you thinks so. What about making those shelves?
That's not heroic.
Would be to me. And Vari thinks so as well. Did you see her touching the design he carved in them?
Bonnie threw the brush up, but this time missed catching it. Brenna sat up and retrieved the brush.
A hero is someone who saves someone, like when Papa saved Mama from the ice storm, she asserted, using the brush to gesture and emphasize her point. Or when Uncle Cole saved Aunt Eleanor from the bad men.
Bonnie snatched her brush back.
You think Uncle Conan needs to save Vari?
Brenna pursed her lips together and arched her brows.
If he is going to win, he will.
Bonnie studied her sister, trying to see if she was being serious.
Do you still think he can?
Brenna nodded.
He just needs help.
Bonnie's eyes widened.
Mama won't help, and I don't think Megan will, because she is Vari's friend.
Uncle Conan needs someone who wants him to win.
A large smile grew across Brenna's face. He needs us.
Chapter 9 Vari smiled sweetly as she took the small cloth being handed to her. The large piece of bread nestled inside was still warm. She held on to it and waited as each person in the large circle was served their morsel and their beverage. She stole a quick glance at Conan, who sat across from her, as he swallowed the contents from the cup, learning that it was not ale, not even mead, but water. She had to admit that she was impressed. His only sign of dissatisfaction was the brief moment of realization. Then he crinkled his eyes and pasted on a smile that almost looked sincere. It had been 4 days since their fight, and Vari would have never dreamed that this setting would be their first encounter. She was still not even sure how she had been hoodwinked into coming. This was Megan's weekly thing, enduring the widow's social circle. Megan was not a widow, but her grandmother had been a faithful member of the circle since before Megan had been born. And after Megan's parents had died and she had come to live with her grandmother, Megan had dutifully joined her each week to listen to the older clanswomen talk as they sewed. She loved it and had continued to come after her grandmother had passed. Until this week, Vari had always found a way to escape, but yesterday she had finally succumbed to the pressure of her friend. And then Megan had the nerve to not even show up. Conan lifted his bread as a sign of acknowledgement, his empty smile frozen in place. Vari curled her lips into a similar expression.
"We are so glad that you two joined us this week," the lady on her left said, her voice warm and kind.
"Aye," came a rickety voice from someone on her right.
We normally just saw, but today as we have special guests, we decided to have a treat first, said another woman a couple of chairs down. She had grey hair that was pulled back into a single plait. Her face was wrinkled, but Fari could tell it was due to excessive smiling. The woman pointed to her bread. "Try it," she said with a nod. "It's Almida's. No one's bread is more delicious." Fari took a bite and had to agree it was very good. The woman, beaming with pride, who must have been Almida, sat next to Conan on his left. She was large-set, with round cheeks and small bright blue eyes that, despite her years, still looked young and bright. Vari's gaze landed on Conan and narrowed. What was he doing here? She could not imagine he did this sort of thing often. She had never heard Megan mention his attendance at the circle, and it was just not in his nature to sit patiently and listen as old women prattled about things in which he had no interest. Seeing her inquisitive look, Conan arched a brow and then took a large bite. A second later he turned and said, "Excellent, Almida. Even Fiona would be envious of your skill." This brought on giggles by several of the women. "Please excuse us, Vari dear," came from the woman on her left, "but we are so excited to have Conan with us." And as if she knew Vari needed further explanation, she added, "We have been asking him to come for years, but until today he has refused." Conan took a drink of water. "Seems my little niece thought it time I came as well, Gavina." Vari pulled off a small piece of bread and popped it into her mouth, glad to have something to help mask her shocked expression. She wondered how Bonnie had convinced him to come today. She could ask, but for a 7-year-old, Bonnie was incredibly smart and evasive when she wanted to be. She would be more successful asking Megan, which she planned on doing right after she finished scolding her for leaving her alone with a bunch of strangers. "We are so sad to hear you will be leaving us in the spring. Whatever will we do?" The question came from a thin woman who looked incredibly frail. Vari feared a good wind would knock her over, and wondered how the old woman was able to survive the cold winters. "Now, Leon, you do not have to worry," Conan answered. "I will make sure someone from Connor's guard steps forward and continues when I leave." The woman sitting to her left leaned closer and said in a loud whisper, "A few years ago, us widows started finding meat at our door. Nothing very big, usually a bird or a rabbit, but the perfect size for us to prepare and eat without leaving anything to spoil. For months we tried to figure out who it was, but it was not until Conan here," a long finger pointed to him, "left several times over the course of a summer to visit some abbeys with Father Lanelly, that we discovered his secret. You see, each time he left, the meat ceased to appear." Realizing that Conan was listening to her, as was everyone else, she spoke louder. "And that is when we knew who our angel was." Vari's jaw had been dropping farther and farther as the story had been told. When it was finished, she raised her astonished gaze to Conan, but he was looking elsewhere. 2 hours later, Vari was surprised to realize she was enjoying herself. Each woman had regaled them with her own personal story of love, and when finished, they had wished for Conan to also find someone who would cherish him, like his brothers had. Some shared tales of their children, most of whom were grown but lived near. Once the bread was consumed, Vari watched as the women brought out their sewing, and was glad that Megan had suggested she bring the drawing she had started sketching to give her something to do. Only 2 women were working on the same piece, combining 2 pieces of fabric together to make a thicker, warmer blanket. Most were doing mending, and another was fashioning a new lana for her son to wear during the upcoming festivities. "Conan, young man, could you help me thread this needle?" Almida asked, handing him some thread. He took the needle and thread in hand and deftly pushed the fiber through the small hole. "Tapa lot," she said when Conan handed it back. "I was hoping you could help me with one last favor." Vari watched him arch a brow as he turned in Almida's direction. He looked as if he was agreeing, but Vari noticed he had yet to actually commit himself. "Your brother Crevan found me the sweetest puppy when he lived here." "He was such a sweet man,"
Gavina sighed, then tapped Mari's hand with a soft finger.
Not as sweet as Alkonin, though.
Piggy just passed, Almeida continued, and I was hoping you could find me another. Finally, Conan glanced Mari's way, catching her staring at him. He gave her a triumphant wink and then said,
"Of course, I would be delighted."
Mari almost scoffed aloud, swallowing it just in time. Conan, delighted to find a puppy. Conan, eager to thread needles. Conan, feeding widows. The man sitting across from her might look like Conan. He might even have his name and his voice, but he certainly was not Conan.
"You are so kind."
Almeida gave his hand a little squeeze. Conan coughed into his other hand, causing Mari to look up. As soon as she did, he caught her gaze, and that was when she knew. Aye, some of his deeds proved he was charitable, but everything he had said and done that afternoon had been to prove her wrong.
"Some may disagree with you, I think," he said. "Why, just this week I was told that one of the very things I was not capable of was kindness."
This brought about chuckles from the group, as they assumed he was just teasing them.
"What nonsense," Leanne said, plunging her needle through the thick material with more force than it seemed possible from her feeble form. "Why, it was just yesterday that a wee lad, you know, Rona's boy, was pestering you about learning how to sword fight. I've heard him ask other soldiers, but they said they didn't have time."
"Or that he was too small," another remarked.
"Aye, but our Conan stopped and showed him a few ways to stop the teasers of another child who was bigger and stronger. Made that lad's day.
My granddaughter is your chambermaid, and thinks you are the kindest man she knows,"
Almeida commented, her plump cheeks turning pink. Conan's head jerked back, and Mari could tell even he was surprised at that one. She had seen his room, and it was in a state of disarray, and while she did not know for certain, her gut said that it was its normal state.
I must say I'm surprised," Conan finally got out.
"Whenever you see her hauling a basket of clothes and linens, you always stop and carry it the rest of the way. You never yell for her to clean the stairwell, and you only ask her to help with your chambers a couple times a month. She considers it a blessing to work for you, and will be sad to see you go."
Conan licked his lips, and a large grin came over his face. He leaned back, crossed his legs at the ankles, and sent Mari a large, "so there," grin.
"And then there is little Bonnie," the woman who sat on Conan's right said, finally joining the conversation.
Mina's perfect posture clashed with the chaos of her white hair, which fought its braided constraints.
"Pretty little thing is as smart as they come, but I've noticed she doesn't play with the other children much. Don't think just because we don't live in the castle that we don't know you have befriended the little lass."
"Aye," Leanne piped in again. "Megan says you are never impatient with her, teaching her things, making time for her even when you are busy preparing for your trip."
Mari licked her lips. Our Conan! It was too much. To think that his most ardent admirers were old women.
"I must say, ladies, your view of Conan is much different from the one a lot of women have."
Hearing Mari's voice, Conan's gaze immediately shifted to lock with hers once again. "I understand that he is a regular insulter of our gender, and incapable of apologizing, even when he is in the wrong."
Gavina clucked her tongue. "Of course we've heard how our Conan is quite fond of the ladies," she began, "but do not be fooled by idle gossip."
"Aye," Leanne interjected, "those women who caused a stir were just silly enough to believe they could turn his head. It is their fault they gave their heart away before our Conan was ready to ask for it."
A single brow formed a perfect arch on his forehead. How Mari wanted to erase that smirk. Maybe he can teach the rest of Connor's soldiers to be like him, for I recently had a horrid experience, Mari stated. Gavina perked up.
Really? Please tell us, my dear, what happened? Did he say something unpleasant?
Did he try to kiss you? Almeida asked.
She had laid her sewing in her lap and leaned forward, her blue eyes twinkling with interest. Mari nodded.
He did,
but I learned that he was doing it just so he could trick me out of the paper I used to draw on.
Well, that is strange, Mina acknowledged. Why would a man want your drawings?
Maybe he wanted it to prove to you that he was interested in what you do, Almeida chimed in. Men have a hard time expressing themselves. Did you know that it took nearly 3 years before my man would even look at me? I thought he didn't like me at all, when all the while the reason he wouldn't speak to me was because he didn't think that I would ever like him back.
Gavina nodded.
Perhaps he likes you, Vari. Conan, dear, maybe you can help Megan's friend Vari find out just what this man is thinking, and then explain it to her.
Vari smiled and squeezed the old woman's hand.
Why, I would appreciate that very much. And if you could find out why he refuses to apologize for his behavior, even though he knows he was in the wrong, that too would be very helpful.
Conan sat up and placed his hands on his knees.
I can answer that last one for you now. Some men don't mind saying and doing anything to make a woman happy. Men like me do.
Vari gritted her teeth and then forced herself to smile.
I'll be sure to mention that to Laird McTierney next time we speak. I wonder what category he will think you put him in.
Branner twirled around in the bedchambers, encouraged by the feeling of success.
You know, Bonnie, kindness was not nearly as hard as I thought it was going to be. And I don't think we need to prove he's honest. Everyone knows Uncle Conan never lies, even to save a person's feelings.
Bonnie towed off her slippers and began to yank on the ties on the left side of her gown.
You think today worked?
Absolutely.
They have to have called Uncle Conan kind at least a dozen times.
But he and Vari didn't seem very happy in the end.
Brenna stopped spinning. She began to sway from being dizzy.
That's because she doesn't believe Uncle Conan's being honorable. We just need to prove he is not going to hurt her.
Bonnie attacked the other side of her bleo.
Well, I thought of what to do for kindness. You have to do honorable,
she said, and shimmied out of her bleo before diving under the covers of her bed. It would be another hour before evening dinner would be ready, but Bonnie was freezing. 2 days ago, the weather had turned, and while it had not been raining, there had been no sun for warmth. It had been very cold outside, listening to the old women talk, but it had been worth it. Brenna was right. Vari might not love Uncle Conan yet, but she could no longer say he wasn't kind.
I think we should wait for proving he's heroic.
Brenna moved to stand close to the fire.
Maybe we can do something at Christmastide for that one.
Another shiver went through Bonnie, and she wondered why her sister was not as cold as she was from their escapade.
That's next week. So how are we going to show that he is honorable before then?
Brenna shook her head, thinking.
We need something to show that Uncle Conan is trustworthy and loyal.
She swayed back and forth on her toes with her back to the fire. Her hands were behind her, absorbing the warmth, when suddenly she snapped her fingers. Her gray eyes, huge with excitement, locked onto Bonnie's smoky ones.
I know what to do, she said giddily. We need to learn how to draw.
Draw? Bonnie asked dubiously.
It will be perfect. You will be out with Conan learning how to make maps.
But I don't want to know how to make maps.
Shh. Listen. You will be out with him, and at the same time I will be with Vari on an outing. Then we will just happen to run into each other.
Bonnie shuddered, just thinking of going back outside again.
It's cold outside. I don't think Vari is going to want to go if it is going to be outside. I know Uncle Conan won't.
Brenna waved her hand dismissively.
We'll wait for a sunny day, and then she will want to go. Everyone is preparing for Christmastide and getting all the rooms ready for guests to arrive. Uncle Conan will want a reason to escape, and Vari is always happy to draw.
That's because she's like you and doesn't get cold, Bonnie groused. And I'm not sure how this is going to prove Uncle Conan's honorable.
Brenna's eyes were sparkling.
Don't worry, it will.
Bonnie lifted the blanket and covered her head.
Let me guess. You have an idea.
Brenna's laughter reached under the covers.
And it's a good one, Bonnie. You are going to love it.
Conan knelt down beside Bonnie and leaned back against the large boulder his niece had